So far this hour, we've been talking about the controversies that can erupt around biblical artifacts. And one reason this is such a heated field is that it's not just history at stake. It's theology, too, what people believe, who they pray to, and how. For example, take the Nag Hammadi texts, also known as the Gnostic Gospels. They were discovered in 1945, buried in the Egyptian desert. 52 texts, scrolls, written by the followers of Jesus. They're full of beautiful and cryptic sayings and poems attributed to Jesus himself, but they are very different from the Gospels that have been canonized in the New Testament. Scholars are still sorting them out. Among them, Elaine Pagels. She's been slowly unraveling the theological implications of the Gnostic Gospels. Here's her conversation with Steve Paulson about the Gospel of Thomas.
It begins with the words, "These are the secret sayings which the living Jesus spoke, and Judas Thomas wrote them down." So it's just a list of sayings of Jesus. And in this gospel, the question, "Who is Jesus?" is answered in saying 77, in which Jesus says, "I am the light that is before all things. I am all things. All things come forth from me. All things come back to me. Split a piece of wood, and I am there. Lift up the rock, and you will find me." So this just suggests that Jesus is a kind of voice for the divine energy, the light that was in the beginning, according to the book of Genesis.
But that's very different than Jesus saying, "He is the Son of God."
Well, it is. It is. And according to this text, which has a great deal in common with the other Gospels, the good news, which is what gospel means, is you too come forth from that light. Because in this text, there's a saying in which Jesus says, if they say to you, "Who are you?" say, "We are children of the light." And if they say, "Where do you come from?" say, "We come from the light, the place where the light came into being in the beginning." And the message of this text, the good news, is that from that divine source, all beings come forth, not just human beings, but rocks and stones, everything that is.
Now, you make the case in your book, Beyond Belief, that the Gospel of John was then written to counteract this message of Thomas.
I was very startled when I realized that. You know, having read the Gospel of John for, you know, I've read it before, like many, as many of us have. And I suddenly realized that this gospel, which sounds like it's Jesus declaiming, you know, he's saying things like, "I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life, I am the light, I am the divine," you know. And according to the Gospel of John, the answer to the question, "Who is Jesus?" is he is the divine sort of in person. The bad news, of course, is that you and I are not. And according to John, the good news is that you can be saved from dying in sins if you believe in him.
Now, I suppose the implications of these two different interpretations of Jesus could be enormous. I mean, on the one hand, in the Gospel of John, there's the message Jesus is God, but in human form. I mean, Jesus is the one and only, whereas Thomas is saying that, well, Jesus is the light. It's not nearly so specific as putting Jesus up on a pedestal. And I suppose it raises the question of whether Jesus is divine at all.
Well, you know, the Gospel of John also uses the image of light. I mean, Jesus says in chapter 8, "I am the light of the world." But you got the critical point, which is that John says Jesus is the only one, right? And the one word that the Gospel of John is always using for Jesus, and only the Gospel of John will say, he is the only Son of God, the unique Son of God. The Greek word means the only unique, one of a kind. And the point of John saying that is to counter the kind of teaching that says all beings come forth from the same source. Now, it may not be obvious that we have the divine image in us. You see, it's not the same as saying we're all God. I mean, that would be pretty almost trivial. But what it says is that humans are made in the divine image, and the divine image is understood to be this energy, this light energy. And so it says that that divine source of energy is hidden within all of us. What we need to do is discover it.
Now, I suppose these must have been pretty important questions in the first few centuries. I mean, before Christianity was accepted in the Roman Empire, before Constantine became a Christian himself, because Christians were persecuted then. And so how you define a Christian must have been incredibly important.
It was very important for the movement, and so much so that many leaders of the church, you know, wrote massive attacks on people who taught this kind of thing. And it doesn't work very well for forming group boundaries, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to build a church, you don't teach that everyone has the divine light within them. You might instead say something like, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to God except through me. And that means that if you want to find your way to God, you better go to Jesus. And if you want to go to Jesus, you better go to the local church that teaches that kind of thing.
And I suppose if you are a persecuted minority, it does make sense to establish clear boundaries so that you have a solid sense of your own identity.
That's a very important point. You know, I realized it's not some kind of conspiracy theory that leaders of the church were trying to stamp out the free thinkers, but they were in a situation of trying to have the movement survive, quite simply, under enormous and horrendous pressure, seeing their friends tortured and imprisoned and executed for the sake of this faith. And so the question of how do you consolidate it? How do you make a formula that everybody can agree on, a sort of simple litmus test, you're in or you're out? And the Gospel of John does that very well.
Well, suppose the Gospel of Thomas had been included in the New Testament, that this was part of the Bible that we have read for the last 2,000 years. Would we interpret the story of Jesus very differently? Would we think about what it means to be a Christian differently?
I don't know. It probably would be, as the Gospels are now, a kind of collage of several pictures of Jesus put together, you know? What it would do is open up the path of seeking and searching yourself within yourself to find spiritual truth in the way that the Gospels we have now often aren't read to do. I mean, often the Gospel of John, for example, says, you know, you believe this and you'll be saved. It doesn't say, go out and discover for yourself the truth. It says all truth is revealed in Jesus. We witness it. All you have to do is believe it. You may have no evidence, but you have to distrust your own experience and trust our witness. And I think that's a great, I think it's unfortunate that the emphasis on spiritual discovery is not encouraged as it is in the Gospel of Thomas. More often, it's closed and shut, and people are told that their own experience doesn't matter. They should just sort of shut up and believe it.
Elaine Pagels is a biblical scholar and one of the foremost experts on the Gnostic Gospels. She and Steve were talking about her book on the Gospel of Thomas. It's called Beyond Belief.